is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball are bringing back their big buy one, get one offer to help fuel your team's off-season training efforts. From now until April 30th, buy one Dr. Dish All-Star Plus shooting machine, get one All-Star Plus for $1,000. Take advantage of this offer while supplies last. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Those are some great deals, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Roshan Russell, head boys basketball coach at St. Rita High School in Chicago, Illinois, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its play bank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klintzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight.
I was considering getting some G League players to podcast for me tonight, Mike.
Hey, why not? Might as well.
The heck? I'm so annoyed. And then maybe
they could go down with laryngitis or something in the middle of the game too, just to double up on the fun. Well, we're here to talk some NBA. We are going to specifically discuss the shenanigans that went on, at least in the Eastern Conference, on the final day of the regular season. And we'll talk about how the West played out. We are not going to dive into any depth on the actual playoff matchups that we already know. We will save that for, I don't know, maybe we'll do a bonus pod this week. I don't know.
So we've got the playing games tomorrow, the first playing games, the Eastern playing games tomorrow, right? And the Western playing games on Wednesday. And then do they play both games on Friday, or is there one game on Thursday for the Eastern Conference
I'm going to answer that question for you right now. Let me look and see.
I guess I should have reviewed that before.
That will dictate our. So we are looking at the Friday. Both games will be on Friday.
Okay, so Thursday is a pointless day. Got it. Yes. Thursday is pointless.
Yeah, there's nothing on Thursday, so we probably would have to come back with a playoff preview. If we're going to do it, we probably have to do it Friday night. So we'll have to play that by ear and see how it goes. But
yeah,
if that makes sense.
That makes sense.
All right.
Makes sense to me, Mike.
All right. We're starting in the Eastern Conference. Is that right?
Yeah. Starting the Eastern Conference shenanigans. Listen, I tweeted right after the Cavs game yesterday, Mike. I said, purposely not playing to win that game tells me everything I need to know about where this season is going. If you have any confidence that your team can compete in the East, you try to get that 2 seed. I don't care, come hell or high water. You want to win that 2 seed because then you'd have play, and I know that obviously the Knicks ended up winning, so it would have been the 3 seed. But you want the 3 seed. You want the 2 or the 3 seed. You avoid Boston. Okay, if we're going to sit here and worry about the 7 and 8 seed, and I know there's some people crumbling, well, you see how that worked out for us last year. I don't care. If you want to have any confidence in this team, you go out to win the game. You don't, I mean, I know I was talking to you on the phone yesterday. They had Isaiah Mobley, and there were 4 straight possessions. Mike, I don't know if you went and watched. There were 4 straight possessions that Tristan Thompson brought the ball up the court in the fourth quarter yesterday and just drove to the basket and threw up a wild shot. He made 1 of the 4, I think, or 3 maybe. I don't know. It's just embarrassment. My dad and I were texting. He didn't watch the game because he was watching the Masters or whatever. And he's like, what happened? And I was like, JB's an idiot. I just cut right to it. JB's an idiot. And he's like, well, he'll be fired. He's like, if we would have won, we would have played Indiana. I was like, well, yeah, to be fair, like, if they're really worried about Philly, New York was losing. And if Tibbs didn't unload all his players in the overtime to get, I mean, no one got hurt, but I just don't understand the mindset. It's not a winning mindset, Mike. It's not a winning mindset. Let's go and tank to play Orlando. And by the way, I don't know that we match up very well against Orlando either. Just P.S. I don't know. They're bigger than us. We'll just leave it at that. And we saw how that worked against the Knicks last year.
That did not work against the Knicks last year. It did not work very well. Look, it's inexcusable that you lose that game. You could sit down and whatever, whether as a front office or a coaching staff or organization making the decision to basically punt that game and try to lose it. It made no sense to me whatsoever in the moment before all those games started. I honestly, I knew, okay, Mitchell's not playing, then Garland's not playing. So clearly there was some initiative prior to the game that, hey, we're not going to try to win this game, but it still felt like you're playing the 17-win Charlotte Hornets who are playing nobody. And then you just go out and I know Craig Porter gets hurt and whatever, but it's just, I would love to know what the thought process is in terms of what we're trying to accomplish here. And I guess if you're going into those games and your only objective is what is the best way that we can guarantee ourselves an opportunity to play a team that we think that we can beat. Again, we think we can beat.
We thought we were going to
beat them. We thought we were going to beat the Knicks last year. I'm a little bit nervous in that I think what I hear you saying is that, yeah, Orlando's size and what they bring to the table defensively, they've been a top five defensive team all year. Suggs is going to get a lot of consideration for first team all defense. And Jonathan Isaac, if he was playing enough minutes, certainly would be under consideration for first team all defense. And the last week or so of the season, they started playing him more minutes. I'm assuming with the idea of trying to ramp up and see if he can't give them 30 minutes a night in the playoffs instead of the 20 that he's been giving them throughout this regular season. So I think when you look at that, I'm not sure how much of a walkover that Orlando is going to be, especially with the state of this team injury wise and where they are, how they're playing. But regardless, I just don't understand. And you made a great point that what is this season all about? What are the Cavs trying to accomplish? And when you have two options where one is you're going to play the Magic in the first round, which, okay, I guess it's a winnable series. And then you're going to get the 67 win Boston Celtics team that won the Eastern Conference by 15 games. And granted, the Celtics have flaws and we've talked about them, but I don't see how you can feel good about that matchup if you're the Cleveland Cavaliers. And conversely, you go and you try to win that game. So worst case scenario, if you win, or I guess in the Cavs case, best case scenario, if you win, you still end up in the four spot. And then if you're the Cavs, worst case scenario, you end up in the two or the three, and maybe you end up having to draw Miami or Philadelphia. And I got to be honest with you, I'm not any more scared of the Sixers or the Heat than I am of the Orlando Magic. And I know that you have playoff Jimmy Butler sitting there on the Heat and you have their history of outperforming their regular season play when it comes to playoff time. And conversely, you have Philadelphia who, in the case of Joel Embiid, you have the exact opposite. You have a guy who has a history of underperforming. He's coming back from injury. He's not healthy. I mean, clearly, if you've watched any of their last two games and he's gone out of those games both times with what appeared to be weird things going on with his lower body. And so to think that Embiid is going to be at his best, and like I said, this is something that's plagued him throughout his career. And to think that he's going to come off that meniscus tear and suddenly be a guy that's going to carry the Philadelphia 76ers in a playoff series and play the 38 to 40 minutes that are going to be necessary as the best player. I'm just not that afraid of Philadelphia that I would have tanked my way out of the opportunity to A, have home court advantage in the first round. As it turned out, if they'd have won, they would have got the 3 seed and played, as you said, Indiana. Now, that wasn't guaranteed, and they clearly could have played the Sixers or the Heat. But as it turned out, it would be the Pacers. But even if it was the Sixers and the Heat, then in the second round, you're looking at playing potentially the Knicks or one of Philadelphia or Miami anyway, if you really think that those teams are more of a threat than the Boston Celtics. You have to say that the easier route to the Eastern Conference Finals would have been through Philly, Miami, and New York, as opposed to Orlando and Boston. I just don't know how you convince yourself that playing a team that won 67 games is a better option in the second round, where you don't have home court, is a better option than playing. And again, I know if the Knicks would have advanced, they wouldn't have had home court anyway. And I know the trouble we had with New York last year, but I just feel like you have to win. And I don't understand it from an organizational standpoint, and I don't understand it from a player standpoint. If you're Mitchell and Garland, you're really okay to sit that game out and not play. Maybe everybody's on the same page, but if they are, I don't understand what the organization was trying to accomplish there. It made no sense to me.
Yeah, it doesn't add up to me, Mike. That's really all we can say about it. It just doesn't make sense. Why? Just play the game. I mean, the other thing that I think about is I think about all those games that they lost that they should have won before this. Like,
correct, absolutely.
I mean, the Clippers game down up 26 and they blow it. The Hornets game earlier this month. You know, those are just two, just to name two that I could think of, probably more if I really thought about it. But it's disheartening a little bit. And like I said, they could come out and go gangbusters and beat Orlando handily. I don't think that's going to happen. But, you know, and I know we said we weren't going to go too into depth into one matchup, but we've already kind of.
No, I don't think we have to. I mean, I don't think it's a matter of us analyzing how the Cavs match up with the Magic, yeah. But I think. The other part of it that I think is strange is it feels like Milwaukee. Now, I know Giannis didn't sit out because he had some fake injury. I mean, he's legitimately hurt, but it didn't feel like and look like that Milwaukee had any real urgency to win their game against the Magic either.
You know, they're 20-21 in their last 41 games.
You look at Milwaukee and where they are. And you look at the Cavs, and what would the Cavs finish over their last 30? They were probably like 13-17, somewhere in that range, I would guess. And yeah. It doesn't inspire a lot of confidence. And so Milwaukee seemingly did the same thing as the Cavs, although I guess Milwaukee had the Knicks lost and the Cavs won. Milwaukee would have fallen all the way to 4, which I have no idea why they were seemingly okay with that particular outcome. It was very strange what went on with Milwaukee and the Cavs. And I think what it tells you, and recent history, at least in my mind, says that when you tank that way to get your way out of a certain opponent, I don't feel like it usually breaks very well for the team that does the tanking.
Yeah.
They don't usually go on a long playoff run because, as you said, if you're confident in your team, and you believe in what you have on the floor, then you think you can go out and beat anybody. And when you're giving up voluntarily potential home court advantages in series, all because you're ducking certain teams, it seems like this organization's mandate is let's win one first round playoff series and that's going to be okay. And maybe it is okay, but I just don't know where this team is, what they're doing, where they're going. It's a weird team. I don't know if they're healthy. When they're healthy, I'm not sure that they've really found any kind of chemistry. I don't think they've gelled in such a way where we've been talking about it for a long time now. Their 4 best players are in so many ways redundant with each other. And it's difficult to play your four most talented players at the same time because of the way those pieces fit together. And to me, again, it was shocking that we punted that game. I just had no thought process that they were going to try to tank that game, especially when the number two seed potentially was sitting there for them to try to get. I thought they would at least come out and compete. And maybe the idea was they were going to compete, and then Porter goes down, and then you're just kind of throwing together a hodgepodge of dudes and you just can't get it done. But I just don't think you can put yourself in that position. I would have wanted to win that game so I could get the two seed. And look, it could have worked out that, hey, maybe you win and everybody else wins and you still are at the four. But what do you have to lose? I mean, if you could have gotten all the way to the two seed, now you have home court advantage. And they almost did. If the Bulls would have held on against the Knicks, to punt on that opportunity to me is insane. It's crazy. Well, it's crazy.
Even my favorite part of this whole thing is it was fan appreciation day at the Cavs game. They do this every year. Every year it's fan appreciation the last game of the season. And they do some really cool things. I get it. But they don't play anyone. They didn't play anyone last year. It worked really well last year. Let's get our guys some rest. Let's get them some rest. I'm not arguing that I don't think Donovan Mitchell should have played. Okay. But there's zero reason that Darius Garland shouldn't have played yesterday. There's zero. He literally, I told you on the phone yesterday, they announced that he was out for the game Saturday night, or doubtful for the game Saturday night because of back problems. And then he threw out the first pitch at the Indians game or Guardians game. And it wasn't like he just rolled it. He threw it normally. Like, so if you're going to fake an injury, my God, come on now. Like, whatever. And maybe he does have an issue. Maybe he has a back thing and they just want, but I don't like it. It's not setting us up for success. And yeah. And then there was no other really other Eastern Conference shenanigans, right? I mean, the Bucks, I don't think they purposely tried to lose that game. They just didn't have Giannis, and the Magic wanted it more. And, you know, the Knicks, I already mentioned Thibodeau playing his starters a ton of minutes in true Thibodeau fashion. Playing his,
they wanted
his
to win,
guys.
Man. They wanted
they
to
wanted
win.
To win. But I give them credit. They wanted to win.
Yeah,
they wanted
that's what I'm saying.
So, I don't know. Any other Eastern Conference thoughts about the games yesterday, Mike?
I think there's more interesting stuff kind of going on in the West. And again, not shenanigans, but just sort of the way it played out. And again, I don't want to dive into all the playoff matchups, but just the way
let me just tell you, do you know what team should be very afraid, Mike?
What team should be afraid?
The Minnesota Timberwolves. They got slapped around yesterday, and Phoenix was all up in their grill, talking smack. And they looked, Edwards looked not good. They did not look good. And now they have to play Phoenix in a playoff series. That can't give the Minnesota Timberwolves fans a lot of things. And I know we're not going to go into the matchups, Mike, but the Western Conference is so, I don't know that I can rely on any of these teams. I mean, even Denver is giving me some pause right now with what happened against San Antonio on Friday night. Like, would you be surprised, and I'm just asking you, would you be completely surprised if every lower-seeded team won in the Western Conference?
Other than Denver. Denver would be a surprise. Denver losing to anybody in the play-in.
If they have to play the Lakers, you'd be surprised?
Yes, I would be stunned. Now, with the caveat that Jamal Murray has to be healthy. If Jamal Murray is not healthy, then all bets are off, and then it becomes a lot more dicey.
I'm just saying there's a chance that we could end up with 5, 6, 7, 8 in the Western Conference. Just looking at the matchups, like, and I don't want to spend a lot of time.
There's a chance.
Mavericks.
A chance.
I mean, who do you have more faith in, Mavericks or the Clippers? I have more faith in the Mavericks right now.
Mavericks for sure.
Who do you have more faith in, the Suns or the Timberwolves after what you saw yesterday? I mean,
that's a toss up for a variety of reasons. So it's a toss up in my mind because
Phoenix is 8-2 in their last 10.
I get it. Look, we thought Phoenix was going to have to run that gauntlet at the end of the season. And I think 2 weeks ago, we thought for sure they were going to be in the play in.
Would you be surprised to whoever wins the 7-8 game or whoever loses the 7-8 game and then wins the you know, their game. They beat Oklahoma City, who has zero playoff experience whatsoever. They're now the one seed, who, by the way, neither of us said they were going to be the one seed, which is hilarious.
No. Gets back to the goofy Friday night loss by Denver, which we'll talk about here in a second. But I'm just saying,
would you be surprised any of those that Oklahoma City loses in the first round?
I would not be surprised. No, I would not be surprised if any of the teams lost except for Denver. And like I said, and Denver, you can make a case that if, like I said, to me, it all hinges on, is Jamal Murray healthy and does he play however many games any particular series goes for the Denver Nuggets? Because they're a completely different team without him. Obviously, they can still win. As great as Jokic is, he can carry and do what's necessary to win a playoff series. However, going to be much, much, much harder if at any point during this playoff run that Jamal Murray becomes less than full strength or misses multiple games in a series. Then it gets a lot more difficult. But if the Denver Nuggets are healthy, I don't care who they're playing coming out of that play-in, they clearly should be able to take care of business with their full complement of players. Again, if they don't have that, then it becomes a different story. But the other three series, 100%, there's no question that I don't think you would look at Oklahoma City, Minnesota, or the Clippers as certainly not as overwhelming favorites like you would normally think of when you're talking about the top of a conference versus the bottom. But I would even make a case that in some of these series, they're not even going to be the slight favorite. They're going to be the underdog. And maybe not the Vegas underdog, but there's going to be a lot of people that the sentiment is going to be, oh, Team X can beat the Thunder. Oh, Team X, well, I guess it's going to be the Phoenix Suns playing the Timberwolves. I don't trust either one of those teams. When it comes to Minnesota, you've got Towns trying to come back in the mix and his checkered playoff history. Anthony Edwards is sort of in prove it in the playoffs mode. And Gobert has always been, maybe through no fault of his own, but has always been less of an impactful player in the playoffs than he is in the regular season. So yeah. I think Minnesota is an unknown. And then you look at Phoenix and you say, I guess in the first round with multiple days off in between games, can those three guys stay healthy for 2 weeks? I mean, maybe. I don't see them staying healthy for 2 months to make a legitimate run to the NBA Finals, but I guess they could stay healthy for 2 weeks. And if they could stay healthy for 2 weeks, that's not going to be a fun series for Minnesota. What's interesting about that series, and I know we're not diving into it, but you have Phoenix's offense, which obviously when those three guys are on the floor is tremendous, versus Minnesota's defense, which has been the best defense in the league the entire regular season. So that'll be an interesting one. And what we alluded to here a couple times, but the Denver loss to the Spurs on Friday night spoke volumes about a couple of things that are, I mean, Wembanyama was just 17 points in 3 minutes.
3 minutes. Yeah.
At one point, like he just is, it's amazing how the narrative on Wembanyama has not completely flipped, because there was no one at the beginning of the season that was saying, oh, this guy, he's not all he's hyped up to be. He's not going to be this guy, this generational talent that everybody thought he was coming into the draft. Everybody still thought that back in November, December, January, but it was sort of being tempered by the fact that San Antonio as a team was just awful. And it felt like Wembanyama was doing a lot of things or being forced to do a lot of things that maybe were a little bit outside of his comfort zone. And therefore, he wasn't as efficient, maybe didn't look as good as, or the numbers didn't look as good as what people thought he was going to become. And over the last 2 months of the season, he has just completely flipped that switch in terms of becoming more efficient, being just a defensive anchor and wrecking ball of everything, where I don't care where you are on the floor, that guy's arm is there. It's reaching out and it's having an impact, not only on guys who actually shoot the ball, but on dudes driving the lane, seeing Wembanyama and just completely doing a Yui and backing out of there just because of his presence. And that's to say nothing of what he's doing on the offensive end of the floor with his ball handling and his ability to shoot off the dribble. And you watch him, and sometimes I know that obviously his frame lets you know that he's 7'4", but when you watch the things that he's doing, it's easy sometimes when he has the ball in his hands to forget that he's 7'4". And Denver wanted to win that game. It's not like Denver had punted on that game. They were up 20, I don't know, whatever, early in the third quarter. And then Wembanyama just basically went crazy. And when you look at what the rest of that Spurs roster looks like, I mean, I think when you start talking about the most interesting offseason teams in the league, San Antonio now has to jump right to the top of the list, because they can't, I mean, they're not, you're no longer on like a, hey, this is a 3-year build, or this is a 5-year build, or this dude's too skinny, or it's going to take him a long time to figure it out. Like, he is, his last 2 months, if his last 2 months were projected across the entire season, he would be an all NBA guy. He would be on one of the all NBA teams without question.
Take
his 2 months without question. And even as it is, I'm not so sure that there aren't going to be people that put him on the third team. He probably won't make it. I don't know if he'll get enough votes, but I mean, the two-way impact that this guy's having, and on a roster that is just completely devoid of guys who can make him better, other than maybe Vassell, is he's been as good as advertised. And I think the last guy that we could say that about is LeBron. And nobody else between those two guys has come close to A, having as much hype, and B, living up to that hype. There's no doubt that if Wembanyama stays healthy, that he's going to be a top five player in the league sooner rather than later, especially when you factor in his two-way impact. So it'll be interesting to see what San Antonio, how they sort of accelerate what they're trying to do and start to build a real roster around him, because the dude is ready to win now. If he had better teammates around him that could set him up and get him the ball in places where he could score, he's ready. I mean, he's ready to start winning basketball games. And I'm not sure that San Antonio thought that when they drafted him.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. The way that he just changed the game and brought them back, were they down 22 points in the fourth quarter, Mike?
I think it was 20. I don't think it was the fourth. I think it was still in the third quarter that they were down that much. Okay. And then he just completely turned it around. Like I said, Denver was not trying to throw that game. I mean, Denver was playing hard and competing. And obviously, Denver wanted a one seed. I mean, if you're Denver, why would you not want to play? Well, I guess if you're Denver right now, you're sitting there going,
they were down 17 in the fourth quarter. They were down 23 in the third, and they were down 17 in the fourth.
Okay, so, there we go. That's all right. So if you're Denver, it's being the two seed, I'm sure they would have preferred the one, obviously. But what are the odds that Oklahoma City gets through the Western Conference Finals? I'm going to guess, we'll talk more about this probably on the next pod, but I think the odds that Oklahoma City gets through the Western Conference Finals is probably pretty low.
Yeah.
Which means Denver's probably going to end up having home court advantage in the Western Conference Finals. So, yeah. I think the other thing that was interesting on the last day of the season, obviously, was the Pelicans and Lakers game. So I don't know. Do we want to jump back to the East, or do we want to just start with the play-in in the West?
Hey, coaches. Today, let's talk about Integrity Insight, a mini course crafted for coaches focused on team conduct and values from our friends at Teams of Men. Why Integrity Insight? This course is a journey into your team's climate and culture. You'll reflect on past incidents, assess your team's communication, and plan for a future where integrity is at the core of decision-making, on and off the court. Integrity Insight comes with practical guides and digital tools for effective planning and collaboration. The goal? To empower you to lead a team where ethical conduct and character growth are paramount. This course is about transforming your team culture, embedding values and ethics in every aspect. Ready to dive deeper into team integrity? Email us at teamsofmen@gmail.com. with the subject Integrity Deep Dive to get started.
Well, Well, let's start with the play in the West, because I was mistaken, Mike. The West games are tomorrow.
West are first. West games are first.
Let's start with the West games. Let's go chronological order. So the first game, we have the Lakers and the Pelicans. Now, I heard some conspiracy theorists thinking that the Lakers are going to intentionally throw this game. Give me a break. They're not going to intentionally throw this game to avoid Denver. They're not going to do that. They're not going to put themselves in a position that they're in a must-win game against the Warriors. I'm sorry. They're not going to do it. They're going to – now, could they lose this game? They could. Now, they've dominated the Pelicans this year, though. They've dominated them. They bully-balled them. And Anthony Davis, obviously, you know, he has back spasms, because why wouldn't he be healthy before the playoffs? And it was because of a push by Larry Nance midair. Now, I didn't see the push. Did you see the push, Mike?
I did not see the push.
So, you know, Anthony Davis said after the game, it was a dangerous play. And I was like, well, anything's a dangerous play with you. You could get hurt if someone threw a thumbtack at you. So, listen, I don't see the Lakers losing this game. I just don't. Now, would the NBA like to have a Lakers-Warriors matchup in the then? You know, here's my conspiracy theories again. Would they like to have a Lakers-Warriors matchup? I'm sure they would, but I also think that they wouldn't want to jeopardize. I think they would like, to be honest with you, I think they'd be like both of those teams to advance, because I think ratings-wise, I mean, who's going to draw more? LeBron and Curry or the Pelicans? Yes, they have Zion. And Sacramento, Sacramento's not drawing anyone, so... I don't see any way, shape, or form that the Warriors don't win the game against Sacramento. But I think the Lakers are winning tomorrow night in the early game. It's in New Orleans. They just dominated them in New Orleans. I think they carries over and they do it again and they move on. I just think LeBron's just – I know I was sending you – I sent you a lot – a lineage of LeBron things that I kept seeing. The Twitter algorithms – apparently know how much looking at things, oldest player to average 25 points per game in a season, LeBron's 1, 2, and 3, 24, 23, and 22. LeBron was officially locked up 25, 7, and 8 averages in his 21st season, even if you put up 0, 0, 0 in the last game. No one has ever done that after their 10th season before. Oh, and he's in what? Is this year 21? Is this year
21.
LeBron has now officially averaged 25 points per game for 20 straight seasons. Jordan and Kobe have 12 total each. And I know Jordan took some years off. I get that. And Jordan still averaged more points per game. LeBron is the only player in the league post All-Star break to be averaging at least 27 points per game on at least 50% from the field and 40% from three. Here's the craziest part. There are 131 in his minutes, and there's negative 71 without him on the floor. It's just those are some of the crazy ones that I saw. I know I saw some more, but I mean, if he would have played like, and I want to be very clear here, he still played well at the beginning of the year, but his post All-Star break is MVP worthy, honestly, stats wise, he's MVP worthy. Possibly he's not going to win the MVP because he didn't have stats the whole season, and you know, but I just think there's no way LeBron's letting this team lose this game. There's no way, shape, or form.
All right. So there's a lot to unpack in what you just said. Let's start with just the sheer incredibleness of LeBron James. And this has been something that I've said multiple times on the podcast. If you ask me who the greatest player of all time is, it's still Michael Jordan. If you ask me the greatest career and just what makes LeBron so incredible is the durability and the level of play that he's been able to sustain for this amount of time is just insane. It is hard to imagine that somebody is going to sustain the level of LeBron's career. I just don't know how anybody
in a 10-year window, Mike, in a 10-year window.
I just don't know how that happens. I just don't know. I don't know how that, what LeBron has done gets replicated. It sounds insane, but it almost feels like Jordan's career. Look, I don't know that anybody's ever going to get there. I don't think anybody's getting to either one of those careers, but to do what LeBron's done for 20 plus years is honestly, it's incredible. And you can't give the guy enough credit for what he's done.
I can't even run consistently for like 2 weeks, let alone.
It's crazy. It's crazy. I'll give you another example. So, and this is obviously completely on a different plane in terms of just what LeBron is doing. But I saw a girl at a tournament this weekend who played Division I college basketball, and she played 4 years, and she said she was eligible to have come back for a fifth year. And this is somebody that I worked with when she was younger. And she said, I just can't go back for a fifth year because my body is just worn out. And this is a girl who played obviously high school basketball, AAU basketball, played college basketball, and she's 22 or 23 years old. And she's saying that from that, her body is worn out. And you look at LeBron now playing 21 seasons of NBA basketball, plus all the playoff games that he's played over the course of his career. And to be able to do what he has continued to be able to do, not only from just a basketball standpoint, but from a conditioning and preparation standpoint, it's incredible. And you cannot give LeBron enough credit for what he's done just on a sheer volume basis. And then, like I referenced back when we were talking about Victor Wembanyama, there's never been anyone in any sport that has come into a sport with the amount of hype, coverage, expectation that LeBron has, who has met and exceeded in any way, shape, or form what everybody's expectations were, and done it without any major, I mean, his biggest scandal was the decision. And look, outside of the city of Cleveland, I'm not sure that there's really anybody who considers that scandalous in any way. So kudos to LeBron on an unbelievable career that shows no signs. Father Time, he had been undefeated, but he's getting pushed. LeBron's taking him to overtime, double overtime, triple overtime, quadruple overtime. He's probably still going to win in the end, but LeBron is making him work for this victory. Let's put it that way. So that's number one. Just kudos to LeBron. Number two, you said you can't see the Lakers losing this game on purpose. And I think I agree with you. I don't see them saying to themselves, let's lose this game on purpose to avoid Denver. But if there was ever a situation where a team could lose and put themselves in a precarious position, but yet set themselves up to possibly advance further in the playoffs, this is that situation. And I think it's that situation for both New Orleans and Los Angeles. I think both teams are going to compete and try to win that game tomorrow night. But whichever team loses is not going to feel that horrible that they lost. Do you agree with that?
I think if the Lakers lose, they're going to feel bad. I mean, they will have home court, but having to play the Warriors probably, I just don't know. I mean, I don't know if they'll feel great about that.
They're not going to feel as bad as they would under normal circumstances.
Well, listen,
right?
they wouldn't feel as bad as they were going to feel if they were in the 9-10 game and they'd lose for sure, obviously, right? Like, but
correct. I'm saying in this 7-8 scenario, I don't care who you put any team you want in there. Put any team you want. It doesn't have to be the Lakers. It doesn't have to be the Pelicans. You put any team in that situation where, okay, if you win this game, you get the defending champion Denver Nuggets, who everybody feels like, if they're healthy, is going to win the Western Conference, despite the fact that everybody believes that all 10 of these teams that are in the play-in / playoffs are all good teams, which when you consider that Golden State won 46 games and is the 10 seed, the Western Conference is pretty strong this year. But everybody nationally, most people believe that Denver is going to win the West, and it'll be a major upset if they don't, again, provided they're healthy. And so you could totally see a scenario here where if I'm going to compete to win that game, but if I lose it, I'm not going to be that upset, or at least not as upset as I normally would be, to put myself into a one game, anything can happen situation where, yeah, maybe I'm getting Steph and he makes 12 threes and we get beat and go home. But it's almost, it's not apples to apples with the Cavs situation.
Yeah.
Because obviously you're putting yourself in a one game scenario versus the Cavs putting themselves in a seven game scenario against what they perceive to be a stronger opponent and Embiid, a potential MVP candidate and last year's MVP. But clearly, if you're the Lakers and it works out that you get the eight seed and you could play Oklahoma City, let's put it this way. If you told the Lakers right now, hey, you don't have to play these games, you can just choose to either be the seven or the eight, every one of those teams in the play-in would choose to be the eight seed and not the seven. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would probably choose that. I want to play Oklahoma City.
So look, they're not gonna throw the game, but you wonder, let's say one of those two teams gets up like a big lead, gets up 20 in the first half. What do they do then? How hard do you fight to dig out of a 20-point deficit in the first half? You're not gonna fight as hard if the matchup was more favorable. If Oklahoma City and Denver were flipped and you got down 20 in the first half, you can be darn sure those teams would be fighting as hard as they could to come back. This other way, I'm not so sure.
I can see your point. So who's winning, Mike? Pick, make your pick.
I mean, you said it. The Lakers, to this point in the regular season, I think they went 3-1 against the Pelicans. Zion has not played well against the Lakers. I texted you the other night during the Pelicans Kings game, and I was just like, yeah,
I was in Friday bed. I went to bed, Mike, I went to bed at 10:15 on Friday. I was
nice
like,
work. Well, I was Friday night is a good night to go. Friday night when you're, I'm not going to say old for you, but when you're
37, I'm not old.
When you're of a more elevated age than in your 20s, Friday night, and you work all week, Friday night is not a bad night to go to bed early if you can. But anyway, I was up and I was watching the Pelicans Kings game, and I texted you in the middle of that game. I just said, Zion is just, the dude is awesome. Like he's the weirdest guy to watch in a standpoint of, when he's running back on defense, he looks like he's like a 45-year-old man. Like he can barely run up the floor. Like it looks painful the way he runs. He's kind of like off kilter. He's not moving very quickly.
It's probably like you trying to jump and touch the net tonight, right?
Probably. And then he gets the ball on offense and he just explodes. Like there's nobody else in the league that explodes to the rim the way he does. He reminds me in some ways of Oklahoma City, Russell Westbrook, in that he puts the ball on the floor and he just rockets to the basket. And then if he were to miss a layup, which he had one against Sacramento where he drove in and missed the layup, and he hit the ground and was already back laying the ball in the basket on the offensive rebound of his own miss before the dudes on Sacramento even hit the ground on their first jump. I mean, it was crazy. Like he's so athletic. He's so fast and he's so explosive. And yet when you watch him move at certain times on the court, like most dudes who are that athletic and explosive, like when you think back to the beginning part of LeBron's career, and you watched him, like he wasn't a great defensive player, but when you watch him run the floor, or you watch him move defensively, or you watch him come over and block a shot, or whatever it might be, like everything LeBron did just looked smooth and athletic. And most guys who are that type of athlete, just they look like that type of athlete in every single situation. And Zion looks like a completely different dude. When he's running back on defense versus when he has the ball in his hands and he's exploding to the rim, it does not even look like the same human being moving in those two very, very distinct ways. And so, look, I think back to when Zion came in the league and how excited we were about it. And that excitement, obviously, over the course of time has worn off because he just hasn't played. But when he is playing well, there aren't very many more entertaining guys in the league to watch than Zion. Now, that being said, they haven't played well against the Lakers. They're still an inexperienced team when it comes to the playoffs. Zion has never played in a playoff game. So when I think about guys that are intriguing, and Pop and I went over this last week when you weren't here, we talked about our five most intriguing players.
That was 2 weeks ago, Mike. Can you believe that?
2 weeks ago. Sorry, 2 weeks ago. Zion was my favorite or my most intriguing guy that I wanted to see. And so I think you're probably right that the Lakers win this game, but I will not be surprised if New Orleans at home comes out. And if I was New Orleans, I would put everything I had on just coming out in the first quarter and trying to put it on the Lakers with the hopes that maybe the Lakers just kind of punt, like I talked about it, and said, you know what? We don't have it tonight. We're down 20. We're on the road. The next game's going to be at home. Let's take our chances. And if we win that game, then we get Oklahoma City instead of Denver. So I think probably the Lakers win a close game is probably what happens.
Okay. All right. Second game, Mike. Golden State, Sacramento. Okay. I know Sacramento, you like Sacramento. You like Darian Fox. You like
I like Sacramento more
than I like Golden State, but listen. Golden State's away. They've been really good away all year. Something Sacramento just doesn't sit right with me. You know, last year they were the 2 seed, they dropped all the way to 9. No, something funky is going on there. I don't know what it is.
No Malik Monk hurts him.
Yeah.
Monk being out hurts him.
I'm taking Golden State in this game, Mike. I just need a pedigree. I'm not going to bet against them until, you know, I have to. I'm not picking against them in this situation, despite the fact that they haven't been playing. They didn't play great all year. Like, they played okay. I'm just not going to pick against Golden State in this situation. They just have the experience, and yeah. I don't have much to say. You know, I know Steph hasn't been great lately. Clay's looked better. Draymond is Draymond. Whatever. He might try to start a fight or something. His counseling hasn't worked. But yeah, I just can't pick a Golden State against Golden State here. They got the superior team, the superior championship pedigree. They got the superior coach. The end. That's what I got to go with.
All right, I'm going to wish this into existence.
You speak it into existence, Mike.
Yes. Give me the Sacramento Kings at home, lost in 7 games in the first round last year as the number 3 seed to the Warriors. Gave the Warriors everything they had. Probably if De'Aaron Fox doesn't injure his finger in game 6, as well as he was playing through the first 6 games, I think Sacramento wins that series last year. I think at home, despite the fact that they don't have Malik Monk, despite the fact that they don't have Kevin Huerter, for some reason, I just feel like Sacramento is going to win. And then going back to our Pelicans-Lakers discussion, as much as the Lakers have had the Pelicans number, the Pelicans have had the Kings number throughout this regular season. And I just don't think they have a matchup for Zion Williamson. And so I think that what happens is the Sacramento Kings win that 9-10, the Lakers win the 7-8, and then New Orleans beats Sacramento. So you get New Orleans in the playoffs taking on the Oklahoma City Thunder, which I think would be an outstanding, fun series to watch. Two young teams, great talent on both sides of the ball for both teams. I think that'd be a lot of fun. So that's what I'm trying to speak into existence. Here's my question for you.
Go ahead.
Of those 4 teams, Which teams do you want to see? And not irrespective of who do you want to see? Who do you want to see in the playoffs?
The Lakers for sure. The Lakers are for sure because LeBron. I'm never gonna say no to more LeBron. I'll be honest with you.
Okay. All right.
The other three teams, I really could take or leave them. I think
It's a no-brainer.
I think those three teams are inconsequential, Mike.
What?
Inconsequential.
Maybe they're inconsequential in terms of their ability to win multiple playoff series, but
I mean, you agree the Lakers are the team of the four, or do you want Zion more than you want LeBron?
I want Zion more than I want the Lakers. If I had to choose between one of the two, I would rather have New Orleans in there just because I want to see what Zion's going to do under the playoff lights.
He's going to get hurt.
He may get hurt. He may not play well. He hasn't been super consistent all year. He's been better over the last 2 months of the season than he was, obviously, when he was out of shape.
And when he was talking to the media, man, I don't know.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Okay, Mike, you talked me into it. I still think I want the Lakers and the Pelicans are who we want. Okay.
Yeah.
Who do I think we're going to get?
The Lakers. You think you're getting Golden State?
Yeah.
Okay. So you can't want Golden State in, right? I mean, as a Cleveland fan, look, Steph's great and whatever, but I've had my fill of Golden State.
I don't think that would be a good series either. I don't think Oklahoma City Golden State would be a good series. I think Oklahoma City would destroy them because they're not.
I don't know about that. I think Oklahoma City. I think that would be a fun series because again, neither team is huge. So Oklahoma City and Golden State, I think, match up. Oklahoma City is probably, if they had to pick a team that they wanted to play out of the play-in. I mean, I guess maybe you'd pick Sacramento, but I don't think Oklahoma City is going to be scared to play Golden State. I think Oklahoma City would rather see the Kings or the Warriors than either the Pelicans or the Lakers. Let's put it that way. They definitely don't want to see the Lakers. And I think they'd rather see Sacramento or Golden State before they'd want to see the Pelicans, just again, because of Zion, how you match up with him and just the uniqueness of what he brings to the table. So I don't want to see Golden State. I've seen enough of the Warriors. I'm fine if the playoffs go on without Steph Curry. And I like Sacramento. I like watching De'Aaron Fox. I think he's underrated as a player. And Sabonis is one of those guys that he's hard to figure out, puts up stats, but yet where does he really rank in terms of the best NBA players? I'm not sure. He's never really been a standout in the times that he's been in the playoffs. So I know last year he was hurt. I think he had the thumb injury, so he just wasn't able to do some of the things that he normally does. But there's no question that I want to see Zion Williamson in the playoffs and see what he can do. So give me New Orleans and Los Angeles. To be honest, I'm not sure which team. I'd almost rather see New Orleans play the Thunder and see the Lakers play the Nuggets. But if it was because I think the Lakers would give Denver at least have a puncher's chance or a thinking man's chance with LeBron trying to calculate and figure out how do we beat the Nuggets versus I think the Nuggets kind of wipe the floor with New Orleans because they're inexperienced. And then on the other hand, I think New Orleans playing against Oklahoma City, you have two inexperienced teams. And I think Zion would be a really tough, not that he's not a tough matchup for anybody, but I think he'd be a really tough matchup for Oklahoma City. Plus you think Valanciunas and his size and going up against Chet. And I know you don't want to run your offense through Valanciunas, but if you're talking about a dude who can mash people in the post, Valanciunas can certainly do that. And they're trying to work Ingram back in and see how it all fits. And I think New Orleans could give Oklahoma City a lot of problems. So those are the matchups that I hope it ends up being. I hope the Lakers get the seven so that they get Denver. And I hope New Orleans then wins that second game. But as long as those two teams get in, I don't really care what order. I just want to see Zion in the playoffs, see what he brings to the table.
All right, coaches, listen up. It's time to kick this season up a notch and give your team the competitive edge they deserve with Game Changer. Game Changer is the ultimate tool for coaches with features designed to help take your team to the next level. It's time to take this season to new heights. Download Game Changer for free on iOS or Android to start getting valuable stats and video your team can build on. Get the ultimate coach's tool today by downloading Game Changer. Game Changer. Stream. Score. Connect. Learn more at gc.com/hoopheads
That's gc.com/hoopheads.
All right, I guess now we move to the Eastern Conference, Mike. And I'm going to be honest with you, I don't know how much there is to talk about here, because whoever wins the 9-10 game is not winning the Friday game. I'm willing to bet a lot. I think the two teams that are coming out of it one way or another are Philly and Miami. Do you agree with that statement?
I agree. I don't know that it's as overwhelming.
I maybe give Chicago a punching chance. If Atlanta somehow beats Chicago, there's no way Atlanta's beating either of those teams.
Okay, I think I agree with you. I mean, clearly, if you want to give me odds or you want to put percentages on it, clearly the percentage chance that it's Philadelphia and Miami coming out, I would say, is somewhere north of 50%, maybe a lot north of 50%. But yeah, when you look at Chicago and Atlanta and you think about a one game scenario, right? The Bulls have been one of the best, if not the very best, team in clutch situations throughout the entire season. DeRozan's probably going to be whatever that award is, the Jerry West clutch player of the year, because of his points per game during clutch time and just what he's done. And you think about Kobe White and his improvement. And so you're looking at those two guys from an offensive standpoint. Could those two guys concurrently have big games and beat you if you don't play well on a given night? I think, again, the answer is not likely, but clearly Kobe White and DeRozan are capable of putting up big numbers. And if the game's close down the stretch, who knows? And I think the same goes for Atlanta, in that if Atlanta were to get in there, Trae Young is supposed to be back, right? Did he play in the last couple of regular season games?
He played, but he was okay. He wasn't great.
So, but still, right? If you're now, look, Trae Young caught lightning in a bottle in 21 when you're going up against Embiid and Ben Simmons and beat the Knicks in New York. And everybody, we kind of talked about back then, hey, maybe this guy is better than what we thought, and just kept coming through in moment after moment. And clearly the Hawks, who won 36 games, have flaws and they're not a good team, but Trae Young is certainly capable of having a playoff game where he puts up 40 plus. I think DeJounte Murray is capable of that same thing, where he could get hot and have a huge game. Now, again, where do you put the odds on that?
Not
20%. 15%, 25%. I don't know where you put it, but it's not completely insane, especially when you think about how sort of, I guess, blah the Miami Heat have been. And then on the Philadelphia side of it, is Embiid healthy? And even if he is, past playoff performance tells you that the likelihood that you're going to get a huge game from Embiid is just as likely as the fact that you're going to get a stinker from Embiid. And so then you're looking at, if Embiid is just average, then you're looking at Maxey against Trae Young, or Maxey against DeJounte Murray, or Maxey against DeMar DeRozan, or Maxey against Kobe White, whatever. And so I don't think it's completely insane to think that whichever team wins that 9-10 could upset one of those two teams. I don't necessarily expect it to happen, but I don't think it's like a slam dunk 100% that we're going to see the Sixers and the Heat. So I don't know if you want to make your prediction first, and then I'll jump in kind of with what I'm thinking
I'm going,
about.
I'm going Sixers win the first game, Heat win the second game. Sixers, Chicago, and then the Heat beat Chicago.
Man, I think Philadelphia wins that first game. I agree with you. I think that despite the fact that Embiid has not looked 100% by any means, he's also put up pretty big numbers. Now, he's going to be going against Bam, who clearly doesn't have the size maybe that you'd like to have to deal with Embiid. Yeah. But on the other hand, Bam still is going to make him work and is clearly probably going to be a first team all defense guy. So you're not finding many guys who are going to put up a much stouter resistance than what Bam is going to be able to put up. But I still expect Philadelphia. They've won 8 in a row. I expect them to come out and win that game. In the 9-10, honestly, I have no idea what to expect in that game. I think you could probably play it 50 times and each team would probably win 25. I don't think either one of these teams is good in any way, shape, or form. I guess it comes down to which...
You're really talking up that game for fans to watch.
I don't know. Which duo do I trust more? I don't really know. I don't know what I don't know. I go back and forth between thinking, because I really feel like whichever one of those teams wins, it sounds crazy, but I feel like the Heat is super vulnerable. Like, I feel like this whole last year's Heat, and they've been just kind of sandbagging it, and Butler doesn't play until at some point, like, they almost lost last year in that play-in game against the Bulls. Yeah. And then they go obviously on a run to the Eastern Conference, to the NBA Finals, and put up way more resistance against Denver than I think you or I would have thought back at the time. But yet they were one quarter away from being out of the playoffs altogether. And I just have a hard time.
It's kind of like the NC State. It's kind of like the NC State run in the March Madness tournament this year, right? The team was about to lose in the quarterfinals of the ACC, and then they get to the Final Four. I mean,
all right. So here's what I'm going to say. I guess I have a hard time. I can't. The Hawks have been just such a goofy mess, and Jalen Johnson's out for them. Who he's been? I don't know. Maybe their second best player, but certainly they're probably their best all around two way player for most of the season. I'm going to take the Chicago Bulls over the Hawks, and I'm going to take the Chicago Bulls to upset the Miami Heat in the second play-in game in the Eastern Conference, which is going to throw the Chicago Bulls against the Boston Celtics. And as a Cavs fan, I guess I'd probably rather see the Miami Heat advance to take on the Boston Celtics, just so Boston could deal with some of those goblins. But I have a feeling that Miami is not going to make it, because they've seemingly just kind of coasted through and this and that. And I don't know.
They're not locked and loaded, Mike.
They're not locked and loaded. Terry Rozier. I don't know. Butler flipping the switch. It's not that I'm not a fan. I just think in a one game scenario that Chicago has enough, and if it's a close game, they've been really, really good in close games, and they've played a ton of close games this season because they've been very mediocre, right around 500. Yeah. So I don't know. This is more of a feel pick than a, hey, there's some great strategy of what Chicago is going to be able to do.
Mike?
No, I know. I'm just saying. I don't believe in Miami. I don't believe in the, hey, they're going to suddenly make and turn it around the same way they did last year. I think trying to catch that lightning in a bottle twice, 2 years in a row, just doesn't seem likely. So I'm going to take the Chicago Bulls. Again, I don't think it's not a slam dunk that it's going to be Philadelphia and Miami. I don't know what the percentages are, but I'm going to play the low percentages and take the Bulls to beat Miami in the second Eastern Conference play-in game.
All right, Mike. Sounds like a plan.
Do we want to talk at all about awards? There's not really much to say. Why don't we just give MVP? I mean, I think it's pretty much clear-cut as to, Jokic is the MVP. Who's second?
And Naz Reid is the sixth man of the year.
Okay. Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that's a good call.
Who's second? I think Duke. Ready to say Luka Doncic. I'm ready to say Luka second.
I think Luka is second. Who's third? This is where I think it gets interesting.
SGA? LeBron?
So the two candidates are SGA and Giannis, I think. And Giannis has kind of been, I think, downgraded because Milwaukee's season has been so goofy. But I think when you look at what Milwaukee has done without him, they've been horrendous without Giannis. And so the fact that Giannis is statistically probably has had his best season this year in terms of just his overall numbers and what he's put up across the board. I think he's the first guy to average 30 plus that shot over 60% from the floor in NBA history. And he's been really, really good. SGA obviously gets Oklahoma City to the one seed. I don't think anybody would necessarily argue against SGA. I think Giannis over the last couple of years has kind of been, for whatever reason, not taken as seriously as an MVP candidate. And he's not going to win it, obviously, this year. But if I was voting, I think I'd put Giannis third, SGA fourth, and then I guess it's a five-person ballot. So I don't know. You'd probably either take in that last spot. You'd put LeBron in there.
I'm willing to put LeBron in there. His age, his post All-Star break. I mean, who else are you going to put in there? Jason Tatum, get out of here.
So Jaylen, I think your other candidates are Brunson and Tatum. I don't think LeBron's not going to be on. Well, I shouldn't say that. I don't think LeBron's going to be on enough ballots to get him to fifth. I think Tatum as the best player on the best team. And then Brunson getting the Knicks to the number two seed with the number of injuries that that team dealt with and just how much Brunson has. He's done so much more and still done it at just about the same level of efficiency that he was doing it before the injuries. And so that usually is something that I think voters like to see, that, hey, this guy did the same thing that he was doing in terms of his efficiency on higher volume. And so I think, again, voters are probably going to just take LeBron for granted. Here's a question as it relates to LeBron's candidacy, and it's one that we've been talking about with LeBron since he went to LA and brought Anthony Davis there. I think most of the things that I've listened to, most of the articles that I've read when it comes to the All-NBA teams, almost everybody that I've seen has put Anthony Davis as a second team All-NBA. Some people have slid him into that fifth spot on the first team, where clearly I think on the first team, it's hard to argue against four guys, right? I think it's Jokic, yeah, Luka, SGA, and Giannis. Those four, I think, are unimpeachable, going to be first team All-NBA. And then that fifth spot, there's some discussion around that. Davis's name has been mentioned there. I've never heard LeBron's name mentioned as first team All-NBA. Most of the time, LeBron ends up slotting into the third team, and most people that I've either listened to or read their articles have had Anthony Davis as the second team All-NBA guy. And it still goes back to, you read the numbers before of LeBron's on-off numbers, and I don't know what, I haven't heard anybody talk about what Davis's on-off numbers are, but I'm guessing they're not anywhere near the neighborhoods that LeBron's on-off numbers are. And so, is LeBron the best player on the Lakers, or has he taken a step back and sort of deferred to Anthony Davis? I would argue that LeBron continues to be the best player on the Lakers and the leader, but it's interesting that most people would probably put AD on the second team and LeBron on the third team, which means he's probably not going to be on that many MVP ballots. But at the same time, you look at the Lakers here over the last 6 weeks, 2 months, whatever period of time you want to frame it, and the Lakers have gone from being a very mediocre team to a team that's been among the league's best over the last 2 months. And you've already laid out all of LeBron's numbers and his improvement since the All-Star break. And so I don't think he's going to get many MVP votes, but I get where you're coming from on that one.
I appreciate that honesty, Mike. Thank you. All right. Good. Oh, I mean, is there any other one we want to talk about?
We don't need to go through all, you know, three teams or whatever.
Chris Finch, the coach of the year.
It's Fitch or Dagnall. One of those two is going to win it.
Not the Orlando coach who took his team from
they got to fifth. I mean, he fits the profile, right, of a typical candidate, but his team got to fifth place in a far worse conference, whereas Mark Dagnall with Oklahoma City and Finch in Minnesota had their teams at the top of a very deep Western Conference for the entire season. And I don't think anybody, look, most people thought that those teams, if things went really, really well, that they maybe had a chance to grab a top four seed. I don't think anybody foresaw that it was going to be Oklahoma City, Denver, and the Timberwolves battling for the number one seed for basically the last 2 months of the season. I don't think anybody foresaw that. So to me, those are the two main candidates. And I think Dagnall's probably going to get it just again because of how young Oklahoma City is across the board. Not that Minnesota isn't young, but Minnesota has a little bit more of a veteran presence than what Oklahoma City has, which basically Oklahoma City's playing all young dudes, whereas Minnesota, you have Gobert, you have Towns, who's been in the league for a while, you have Conley. So I think it's going to go to Dagnall, coach of the year. That's what I see. All defensive right. player of the year, is it Wemby or Gobert?
Oh, it's got to be Gobert. They're not going to give it to a rookie. Even
Let's
if we
put
think
it this way, it's going to be a lot closer than that vote would have been if it was taken a month ago. I'll tell you that.
Well,
much.
Here's my only problem is the Spurs didn't win enough. I just can't.
I understand, but if you look at all the numbers, if you dive into everything, that when Wemby's on the floor, they're a completely different team on both ends. And when he's off the floor, they're horrendous. And overall, I guess they've been horrendous, but Wemby is coming. Wemby is coming for multiple defensive players of the year. He is, if he doesn't make all NBA this year, which I don't think he's going to, but he's going to be a lot closer, I think, than people think, and certainly than anybody thought 6 weeks ago. And I think this is safely the last season where he is not an all-star and he is not on an all-NBA team for a long, long time, provided that he remains healthy, because, whew, man, he's something else. He's just – I've never seen anything like it in a guy that size, the things that he can do and the way that he can move. It's just – it's super entertaining to watch. Let's put it that way.
I agree. He's fun to watch.
All right. So tomorrow night, Western Conference play-in games. Well, I guess it'll be, by the time everybody hears this, it'll be tonight, which is Tuesday night, Western Conference play-in games. And then we'll flip it around Wednesday night. We will see the Eastern Conference playoff games.
I was thinking,
games.
Mike, maybe if we're feeling spicy, you know, and we do our two interviews on Wednesday and we just go right from the interviews to talk about the play-in games.
It would probably be a little shorter because we obviously will only know the 7 seed at that point, because the 8 seed will still be.
They play at 9:30 though. They play at 9:30, so I'm thinking, like, if we were to start like at 11:30, by the time we're
right, but we're still not going to know the 8 seed. We're only going to know the 7 seed because you're going to have two games in, and then there's still another game to be played Friday.
Yeah.
So,
oh yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So we'll know the 7 seed. But we'll at least know the answers to some of the questions that we talked about tonight in terms of, will the Pelicans or Lakers, they're not going to tank, but will they punt on a game if it gets out of hand? So that to me is the most, I'm far more interested in watching those two Western Conference games than I am the two Eastern Conference games. Yeah. I don't know how you feel about it.
I agree completely. And, you know, well, the first game's the game I'm most interested in just because it's LeBron versus Zion.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, I will be glued to the TV for that one for sure. All right, let's leave it there. Thanks to everyone for checking out tonight's end of the regular season play-in preview episode of the Hoopheads Pod. And we will be ready for the next one. Maybe it'll be a bonus sometime later in the week to get in a playoff preview before the playoffs start, if we can make it work. If not, we'll see you back here next. Well, I guess we're going a day early, so who knows when we'll be. But anyway, we will be back at some point with another NBA episode and our regularly scheduled.
We tend to get a little crazy with the schedule once the playoffs start anyway. So we'll just
playoffs make it a little bit less regular depending on what's happening. And especially since the Cavs are in there, we could have some emergency Cavs podcasts as things go. So we'll see how everything plays out. But thank you for checking out tonight's episode, and we will catch you on the next one. Thanks.
Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job.
A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads Podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.